Hi, I'm Moshe, and I'm autistic.
I'm Leah, and I'm boring.
Welcome to Now You Know One Autistic,
a podcast about neurodiversity in couples, marriage, meltdowns, and making it all work.
The opinions expressed in this podcast reflect the experience of one couple and one autistic.
Nothing that you hear in this podcast should be taken as a medical opinion. And unless otherwise stated, no one is an accredited specialist in any of the many fields that comprise the autism spectrum.
But as someone who is on the autism spectrum, I feel that my experiences will be very valuable to many of you. Whether you're on the spectrum, a support person like Leah, or just a curious bystander.
If you think that you or someone you care about may be autistic, consult your family doctor. So Moshe, this is very exciting. It's our very first episode of our very first podcast.
It really is. We've been talking about doing this for a while, and it's pretty neat that we get to actually get started on this.
Yeah. So what do you think that the people would want to know about us or know about anything, really?
Well, I think to start off with, we should probably tell them our story.
It's a very cute story.
It really is.
Where should we start?
Well, why don't we talk about, you know, who we are? Who is Moshe and Leah?
Moshe and Leah are a married and devoted couple. One of them is neurodivergent. One of them is neurotypical. We're currently raising our two youngest children who are still in the house with us. We live in Jerusalem, Israel. That's in the Middle East. Moshe works. Leah is a housewife right now. And that's essentially who we are at this time.
Perfect.
The reason I say this time is because we've had many, many incarnations throughout our life, as you'll learn while listening to this podcast.
For sure. So we kind of got an idea of who Moshe and Leah are, but how did we become Moshe and Leah?
That's a funny story. You have to go back to Montreal, Canada, circa 1988. I just aged ourselves.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, we were 7 years old and we both came from from divorced single moms. And I think were we part of a group or was there something?
Yeah, we met through the Jewish community. Like, how else were we going to meet?
Right.
So in Montreal at the time, every mom was divorced. The 80s, nobody stayed together, really. It was atypical to have a friend who had parents together. And the Jewish community center, I guess, set up this group for single moms with kids so that they could, I guess, talk about their divorces and the kids could play together.
Right. So I was... Where did we actually meet for the first time?
Sammy's.
So that was the first time that we met.
It was, yes.
Who, I think that was like a birthday party or something like that?
No, I think it was a get-together that...
It was just
having.
A get-together.
Yeah.
Okay.
That the mom's group was having.
So you came in with your mom, and I remember you were wearing this, like a black dress with like polka dots on it or something.
Yeah.
Yellow polka dots and frilly socks and some kind of shoes, obviously. And I think I was looking, because Sammy's was one of those places that existed in Montreal. I don't even know if they're anywhere else, where it was a place where you get like the usual, I guess, bar food, like burgers and fries and breads and
yes,
chicken fingers and stuff.
Why was Sammy's unique? Let's just summarize that quickly. It was made out of an abandoned train.
It was.
Had just kind of left in a field.
Like in the middle of nowhere.
And they turned this abandoned train into this restaurant that was filled with video games to keep bad boys like you off the table so their moms didn't have to deal with them. And they had really good food. They had like rolls and chicken fingers and stuff. So right. It was the place to go before cell phones and Netflix.
So we had to get together and I was in, I don't even remember where in Sammy's I was. And You walked into the room and I just kind of stopped everything that I was doing and just looked at you. And I was like 7 at the time.
Yeah.
It was just, what is this? Like, I don't know what's going on. I knew in my own mind, it was like, my life is never going to be the same again. As much as it's possible for a 7-year-old to fall in love, that was when I first decided I was in love with you.
That is adorable. I had a very different experience there, but people tell the story. It's like legend now.
Mm-hmm.
So I was playing with your little sister,
Right.
And she was like my little baby dolly because she was only 3 at the time. So,
right.
Of course, little girls love playing with other little baby girls, right? She was wearing this cute little red dress. And you and your friend, who I won't name, I guess without his permission, came running up to us and you stopped. And I was like, oh, look, it's a boy anyway. And I sort of walked away. But my mom and your mom used to tell the story that you actually ran up to me, stopped, your eyes opened wide, your mouth fell open, and you went, oh. And sort of everybody knew what was going to happen at that point, I guess.
Yeah. So that was the first time that we met. And then we used to, you know, get together, either just you and I or you and I and the other guy. And we'd go for like breakfast, and our moms would like sit and spend hours sipping coffee.
For hours. You're going to hear a lot about this stuff. I think we're going to reference back to it quite a bit when we're telling different stories and talking about different topics. But yeah, we would hang out all the time. And another interesting aspect to our story is that we were both from the Montreal Jewish community, but Moshe was actually quite well off, and he went to Hebrew day school, where he had more exposure to Judaism than I did. And I was not well off, and I lived in a much poorer part of town, where I went to a Protestant school of all places, because that was the public school at the time and it was what we could afford.
Right.
And I would often spend weekends at his nice sort of big house in the nicer area, I guess because it was one of those things that my mom wanted for me. And it turned out to be a really good influence on my life. And also just he and I and his sister got really close. Like we were the best of friends for a very long time.
And we sort of just kind of grew up together. Like I had other friends who went to my school or that I was associated with, and you had, you know, the friends that you were familiar with that were in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But then we would like get together and we would just do stuff together.
Yeah.
Our moms would get together sometimes with other moms or sometimes just with you and I. And it was the 80s. So we had, you know, we did 80s stuff together.
We did. Our moms were like the mean girls. They would make fun of all their other friends and right. drink coffee forever. It was, anyway, those were the times. So that's how we met. Why does this roll into what we need to talk about?
Well, it's important to know who we are because we are together, but we're together in our 40s. And it's an interesting story because if you look on the list of, I don't know what podcasting app you're listening to this on, but if you look at the list of podcasts that are available for neurodivergency or for autism or for relationships, a lot of the time you'll talk to experts, you'll talk to people with PhDs, and they'll be relationship therapists, sometimes they'll be counselors, and essentially they would be so-called experts. They might be in relationships themselves and talk about that, or they may have qualifications to talk about relationships, or they might have qualifications in psychology or sociology, developmental, you know, work that allows them to be qualified to talk about these topics. But I don't believe, and of course I could be completely wrong, and I'd love if you know of any like that, then absolutely let us know. I don't know of any couple that is that is mixed functionality, neurodivergent and neurotypical, that is together, that has the life experience of knowing each other as long as we have. And that, and one of the most important things about that is that a lot of these podcasts are very sanitized. A lot of these conversations are very scripted. Today, we're going to talk about this and this and this and this and this, and we're going to keep it on the up and up. But I work, as Leah said, I work from home. I have my own job. I work for myself and she doesn't currently work. So we can say what we want. We're not going to offend someone in another place. And we're in a position to talk about these topics in a very open and honest and blunt way. And I think one of the things as we go through the podcast that we'll discuss more is bluntness and honesty and openness and straightforwardness is really key to the way of relating to neurodivergence.
In a very deep way. We're able to take a very deep dive into a lot of the issues that we've had. Neither Moshe and I are very shy people, so we will go there with you. I think this is a point in time where we're going to remind everybody that also one of the reasons why we're able to do that is because we're not accredited experts in anything. So none of us has a PhD or an alphabet soup behind our name. We just have lots and lots and lots of life experience. And we're willing to share a lot of what works for us, what doesn't work for us. It'll just be a fun time.
It'll be a really fun time. And as we said in the intro, or as the intro said before this episode started, neither of us are qualified to give medical opinions. Neither of us are qualified to give professional advice. What we have is our own life experience. And that sort of leads into the title of the podcast, Now You Know One Autistic.
I was going to ask you about that, Moshe. Why do we call it Now You Know One Autistic?
So what a lot of people don't necessarily know about autistics is that we're not monolithic. Now, if you have a cold, or you have the flu, or you have like chicken pox, or you have some kind of, I don't want to use the word condition, but if you have some kind of thing going on with you, whether it's mental illness, whether it's physical disability, whether it's just some sort of sickness, it has a certain level of understanding with the symptoms. If you have a cold, you have a runny nose, you have a sore throat, you have a cough. Sometimes you have a fever. If you have this, but not that, then it's probably this, but not that. If you have depression, then you're going to feel down more often than not. You're going to feel like they have these feelings that they express. With autism or general spectrum of neurodivergency, there's very few things that connect one autistic to another. And the title of the podcast is If you've met one autistic, now you know one autistic. Because what works for me and what doesn't work for me is not necessarily going to be what works for another autistic. And it might be, but it might work in a different way. So what we really kind of want to discuss, because a lot of these podcasts that involve people who are autistic or videos you look on YouTube or Instagram or TikTok or whatever, they have autistic people and they go, look at the person and is what they're doing. Look at what they're doing. Or they have these videos that if you Google search, what does autism feel like? They have these, you know, here's a typical experience of what an autistic will see in this sick or what they'll experience. And I looked at those videos. I went through them and I sort of said, all right, so I kind of want to feel what I'm supposed to feel when, you know, when I'm autistic and how I can,
when I'm autistic.
And I looked at them and I'm like, yeah, but also no.
Exactly. So I think what Moshe's trying to say in his really verbose way of speaking, which is another thing you're going to notice, is that in our household, we discuss a lot about neurofunctionality. And the reality is that the spectrum that you'll see online when you research what is autism is a very useful tool. The symptoms that you'll see online, again, a very useful tool. Some of the things that you're going to find when you do research or talk to experts on this are very useful tools, but they are guidelines. So it would be the same as me saying, I am exactly like every neurotypical. Because my brain functions in this way, we all like the same things, we all do the same things work for all of us, and that is just ridiculous. The only reason why Moshe's neurofunctionality is not typical is because there are less people like him than there are like me. But it absolutely doesn't mean that he or our son, who's on the spectrum also, which you're going to hear a lot about in the coming episodes, are the same as each other even, and they're exposed to each other all the time. And they're certainly not the same as other people that they've met, necessarily.
Definitely. And another thing that we are going to focus on in this podcast that I don't really think that any other podcast is focused on. And again, if that's not the case, I'm absolutely okay with being proven wrong. Let us know by email or in the comments or by responding if there's like a way to do that in the format that you're doing. And what we're going to do is actually kind of flip the script a little bit. Because all of these autism or neurodivergency-focused podcasts talk about the way that a neurotypical can relate or understand, or function with, or develop a relationship with, or communicate with, or be intimate with a neurodivergent. But I am a neurodivergent. Did you know?
I kind of knew.
I did. If this is I apologize if this is the first that you all are hearing about this, but I am neurodivergent. I am autistic. And
it's also ADHD.
And ADHD. And a lot of the questions are focused on how, for example, Leia can understand me and relate to me and get along with me. But what about how I relate to her? What about how I'm able to communicate with her? And the difficulties that I have with getting my point across, with expressing my needs, with showing her that I need certain things and don't like certain other things. Because one of the things that we're going to talk about a lot, and it's number one pet peeve when it comes to autistics, and I don't want to get in trouble, but again, it's my word, so I can use it, which is another thing I'm going to say quite a bit. Maybe we can put it on a t-shirt at some point, is I hate the term nonverbal, because a lot of people throughout the ages have tried to divide autistics into categories. They treat autism like it's a substance that you have to stick in a jar with a label on it. This jar says high functioning. This jar says low functioning. This jar says verbal. This jar says nonverbal. And I'll tell you why I hate the term nonverbal. Because, and I just want to say that I'm just going to give like a quick touch on it, because we're going to have like a whole episode on communication. But what I hate, just like Cole's notes, as we used to say in Canada, about the term nonverbal is nobody, unless they're selectively mute and make no noise whatsoever, is nonverbal. Everyone communicates in their own way. They might communicate using sounds. They might communicate using words. They might communicate using a language that only they know, but they are always trying to communicate. And communication is key. And a lot of my struggles, both in my own life and also in my relationship with Leia, is this is how I feel. How can I get that across? This is what I want. How can I get that across? This is what I'm going through. How can I express that in a way that she will understand? And I'm sure there's a lot of autistics out there who are, maybe they're in relationships. Maybe you have an autistic child. Maybe you have an autistic friend. Or maybe you just know autistic people and you're like, how do I talk to them? Well, the question I want to ask you is, maybe they're wondering the same thing.
That is where we're unique, because of the childhood best friend situation. I had no issue once we were in a relationship with you going, well, I can't, and you have to, and you have to understand me. And I had no issue looking at you and going, well, what about you understanding me? What makes you so special? And I think that a lot of mixed couples don't do that, because the neurotypical doesn't want to feel like, I don't want to use this word, like a mean person. Let's go with that. They don't want to be judged as being mean or harsh, and they don't want to be judged as being ableistic. They don't want to be judged as being ableistic. So they have to accept all the bad behaviors, because that's what an autistic is. And you said something very cool earlier about sort of like your grown-up version being, you know, three midgets in a trench coat.
Right.
Versus I would look at you and be like, I see you, Moshe. I see you. Stop that. And that was extremely useful for us to sort of be able to get through that haze of, I'm neurotypical. Am I being ableistic here? Can I say this? Is this even okay? And I was like, no, what about me? And that honestly really cracked the door open to a lot of very useful conversations.
Exactly. This is probably a good point to mention, that one of the things that makes our podcast very unique is that we do not censor ourselves as much as we possibly can. So if we say something that offends you, or Leia says something that offends you, or I say something that offends you, just know that we mean it from the best possible place. And if you happen to be a little person and are offended by the term midget, then just know that we mean it from the nicest place possible. And we don't mean to offend you, but feel free to send us comments indicating why you feel that that term is offensive to you. And that is how we're going to go forward. But it is going to be a raw podcast, so you're going to hear some things that might not be PC, that might not be woke, and that is kind of what makes us unique, I think.
Yes, and I will apologize publicly to those people and listen to everything that they have to say.
Fantastic, because we're very open to criticism. And if you listen to the podcast, This is the hook for the end, but we'll say it now. If you listen to the podcast and you have comments and you have complaints and you have concerns and you have questions and you have conundrums and you have queries and you're like, I don't think that what you said was right. Great. Tell us why. Or I really, you know, didn't like that you used that word. Okay, great. Tell us why you didn't like that word. We can have a communication. We are happy to hear from you. In fact, if we say something that really offends you, let's discuss it and make it, maybe we can talk about it in a future episode. So this person commented about episode whatever and said that we said this thing and it was actually really offensive to them. Let's talk about that.
Because again, also as a neurodivergent, something that I've gotten to know about you is things that don't offend anybody else really offend you.
Yes.
The things that offend other people, they slide right off of you. So you never know. Somebody with a difference, a body difference, a functionality difference, a brain difference, might actually just like to own that term. I was a woman of mass for a long time, and I freely used the word fat. So again, you can message me and we can discuss that as well. Right. Because when it's your term, you can do it.
For sure. So the discussion about, you know, comments and replies and maybe making it into a future episode is a good segue to discuss the format going forward. So what's going to happen for future episodes is that it's going to be Leah and I, and we might try to get guests in on it at a later time. And
we should probably mention that we have a minor bird couple that lives on our deck. So yeah, if you're hearing tweets.
So just as, again, raw, uncut, unfiltered. So we're recording the podcast in our apartment currently in Jerusalem, and we have lots of birds, and we have a minor bird couple that lives on our balcony on occasion, and when they come here, they express their pleasure with the food that we've left them by tweeting very loudly. So maybe if you want to discuss if you have birds that live on your balcony and if you feed them, and also why that's not a good thing, and we can discuss, you know, the wildlife in your city. But let's talk about some of the topics that we're gonna discuss, because it's generally gonna be this. It's gonna be Leah and I talking back and forth, having conversations with each other. Like I said, we might have people on if we can figure out how to do it, where we discuss other topics depending. And some of the things that we're gonna discuss, Leah.
So parenting as an autistic and parenting an autistic child.
Right.
Those are some of the topics that we find extremely important. Communication, every style and means of communication, as Moshe said about the nonverbal versus verbal, and double empathy, different styles.
If you don't know what double empathy is, we'll definitely get into that later. We're going to use a lot of terms, a lot of jargon sometimes. We try to make things as understandable as possible, but if we use a term that you don't understand or don't know and we don't like explain it, please feel free to let us know, and we'll be happy to discuss it in a future episode or just respond to you privately if you have any questions.
From our layman's understanding, is ASD different than ADHD, Tourette's, global delay, and all the other things that are currently under the same umbrella? Decision-making, who makes the decisions in the household and why?
Right.
Intimacy and connection, every type of intimacy, including sexual intimacy.
Yeah, there's going to be a disclaimer on that, of course. But again, we leave nothing out. So if you do want to stick around for a future episode about Leah and I's, you know, sex life, then buckle up.
Self-care, therapy, to therapy or not to therapy, and which therapies work.
Right.
And which don't. Autism in the wild. We're going to try to speak to other autistics and see what they have to say about things.
See how that goes.
Traveling and adventures. A big topic in our household is fleeting fancies. So Moshe will come home with these bright ideas and we have to sort of wade through which ones are just interests of the moment or stuff that we should, you know, chuck it all in and give it a shot.
Right.
Being autistic in the Jewish community, it won't necessarily interest everyone, but it's a big part of our lives.
Yeah. I mean, Leah and I are what you would consider Orthodox Jewish. This podcast is not about necessarily our faith or our religion. And certainly we don't intend on speaking to dogma or doctrine, because we're aware that there's going to be people out there of all different faiths, but we are going to devote an episode to connecting the two. And when we get to that episode,
we'll probably disclaim that one as well.
Yes.
There's strong feelings.
And I mean, we're happy to talk to people of all other religions. So if you do want to be featured possibly in that episode and talk about how your religion, whatever it may be, is influencing your relationship vis-a-vis the neurodivergency angle, we can talk about that.
We're also going to discuss the uncanny valley of autism,
mm-hmm.
where the person sort of seems kind of just like you, but they're a little bit off.
Right.
And again, apologies if that's offensive to you, but it's a reality and we're not going to shy away from it.
Right.
What time means to Moshe. Apparently time passes differently for Moshe and also our son.
Yes.
We've noticed than it does for myself or maybe someone else. Liaison with the school, emotional labor, who does, you know, a lot of the emotional labor and heavy lifting and how that works. And, you know, just anything else that may come up. And we're very open to things that people want to talk about from our perspective. We are going to do a lot of research and come at you with some facts as well as our opinions. I think that's an important thing to say.
Yeah. And this is not by any means an exhaustive list. This is our first episode, or as we call it, episode zero, because it's really more about introducing ourselves than actually getting into any of the topics, which will be next week's endeavor. But feel free to leave in the comments any ideas that you have about things that you'd like to talk about. It may be difficult without knowing more about us and our knowledge and experiences. But if you do hear something, you're like, oh, you know what? I'd really love to hear, you know, Leah talk about this, or I'd really love Moshe to explain this. We would love to, you know, do that. And again, for the second time in this episode, we are not experts. We just have our own life experiences, but we're not by any means stating that what we're saying is the definitive answer for all situations, because again, the podcast is called Now You Know One Autistic, not This Is How All Autistics Are, which would be a far different podcast and far more controversial.
An impossible podcast.
It would be an impossible podcast and very short-sighted. And I think overall, the podcast is generally us, Leah and I, yammering on, but it also is meant to be a dialogue. So if you have feedback and if you hear something that you have comments on or you disagree with something that we're saying, we would love to talk about it. Because like I said, we're not experts. You definitely like to hear more about your feelings and the feelings of everyone who's listening.
Absolutely. So one thing that we wanted to touch on in episode zero that we haven't is how you figured or how you discovered that you were autistic.
Right. So one of the problems with being autistic and also ADHD.
And the 80s.
And in the 80s. Is that there wasn't a lot of knowledge with neurodivergency. And again, I'm going to go into a bit of a controversial subject here. But again, it's my life, so I can talk about it however I feel like. In the 80s, my experience, and again, this was just my experience as one autistic, is that if you had some kind of a different functionality, be it intellectual, be it learning, be it developmental, be it anything, you were just called retarded. And that is just the way it was. And a lot of people don't like that word, but I would urge you, for example, to watch commercials from the 70s and 80s. And that was a word that was just thrown around casually. And it is the way a lot of people saw me, and even those who are very polite, because I'm not intellectually disabled. I do know many people, or I have known many people that do have certain things that have delayed them. And that's, you know, that's their own story to tell. But I was always different. I always had difficulty with my emotions. I always got very lost. I'll tell a quick story, just a quick side note, that these podcasts will generally be between 45 and 60 minutes. So we still have some time. I'll tell a quick story. When my parents divorced when I was about 4 years old. My father moved, I believe, to Ottawa, and my mother and I and my sister stayed in Montreal. But when my parents were together, I must have been about 2 or 3 years old. I was always a very early riser. Sleep disturbances and difficulties is something that is medically relevant to autistics, and it does seem to come up quite a few times.
Our son doesn't sleep.
But I was a very early riser. So I would get up at 4:30 or 5 o'clock every morning, not because there was anything in particular going on, but just because I felt like that was enough sleep for one night. And I would go into my parents' bedroom and I would sit on my father's side of the bed and just put my face like right up to him and just stare. I wouldn't make any noise. I would just stare. And he told me that like he would always get this weird feeling like someone was watching him, and he would open his eyes and my eyes would be like right there. And the first few times it was very disconcerting, but after that he was just like, okay, so you need to not do this. Give us another two or three hours, then we'll get up. So we had this beautiful living room where my mother put plants, and they had these vertical blinds that were sort of dangling on a string, and they would sort of, and the window was slightly open, or there was like a forced air conditioning, and they would sort of move around. And I would sit on the couch across from the verticals. And as the sun would hit the verticals, there would be shadows and shades cast on them. And I would actually sit on the couch and watch the different, you know, lights and shadows and things just go back and forth. And I found it mesmerizing. I would make up these pictures in my mind. I recall at one point I was sort of the shapes of the shadows turned into like a horse that was running across the window. It was actually very surreal. And that was my first indication, in hindsight, of course, because when you're that age, you don't think about those things. That was my first indication there might have been something a little bit off about me. I had a lot of difficulties with, you know, being in groups. Whenever I was put in large groups, I would have what we now know as meltdowns. They called them panic attacks.
Or they called you just being very difficult.
So I struggled.
Your childhood. Go talk to him. I don't know what to do with him.
Right. So I would go through periods of just being very emotional or very blank. And in those days, they didn't know a lot about autism, but they thought they knew a lot about giftedness. Mm-hmm. So there was a period of time when I was probably about 5 or 6 that somebody, could have been a social worker, could have been a psychologist, could have been a psychiatrist, could have just been a friend, I never really knew, told my mother that she suspected that I must be gifted, because gifted people are like that. I couldn't walk until I was probably about 3, but I could read. I would be 18 months old, and I would be sitting there just reading books and speaking like actual words. My mother, just as a quick side note, my mother told the story that she would walk in. It's like she walked into my bedroom when I must have been just a few months old, lying on the change table. And again, we know you're not supposed to leave the baby unattended on the change table. But again, it was the 80s. And if your baby died, I guess they weren't meant to live or whatever. But she walked into the room and I was just lying there playing with my feet. And she was getting ready to change me. And she said, I looked up at her and I had these big blue eyes then, which I still do. And I said, Mommy, I'm filthy. And she just about fell through the floor. She was like, this baby was just articulating to me these complex thoughts. Not I'm messy or I'm dirty. No, I'm filthy. I am filthy, Mommy. So she changed me. So anyway, back to the gifted story. So they put me in a day camp for gifted kids. And I walked into the classroom one day and there was like these toddlers doing complex calculus on the blackboard. And someone was like painting this masterpiece on an easel. And this other guy was like doing Rubik's cubes and putting together puzzles. And I would just walk in looking at all these things going, I don't know what's going on here. And the kids would like approach me and be like, well, what's your favorite theoretical physicist? And I was like, I like dogs. I like horses. I like cat. I can color. I know colors. I can do color. Do you know colors? So all the kids would approach me and try to connect with me on their hyper focus or their passion. And I just didn't know. It took a few days of me just kind of standing around going, I don't know what's going on. Before the person who ran the camp went to my mom and said, yeah, I don't think he's gifted. So they took
me out of the... This is a common story from back in our day, by the way. A lot of autistics are who we now know are autistic. We're putting gifted programs, mostly because I think that the social pressure was off. So they would function better. So this is where I'm going to step in. And I'm going to talk about very quickly, my mama bear side is coming out right now, because this is a prime example of why functionality labels, or trying to understand the functionality of anybody really, but especially an autistic, is so, so damaging. Because neither Moshe nor our son would actually have met the criteria for autism long ago. And everybody says to me all the time, "What, they're so functional. Wow, they read so well. They're so articulate. And, you know, our son is so popular. He's so popular. He has so many friends." I had no idea. And I'm just sitting there going, "Yes, but I struggled to get our son to take a shower and clean his room today. He is low functioning in the things that don't matter to other people." And that's what is very, very, very damaging. So they're like, "Yeah, you're his mom and you can do that. And when he's out in the world, he's cute and he's happy and he's funny and he's got, again, big blue eyes. And, you know, he smiles and he's functional enough and he doesn't have so much intellectual delay. So we don't see him as an issue." And he's not an issue. He's a human. But
no, right.
He has issues. And that's the point. If he's going to function as a human being that gets older, he's going to have to be helped in those areas where he's less functional. And the same thing is with you.
Right. Because this is why when people say autism is a spectrum, it's a spectrum. And a lot of people hear that and they're like, "Oh, yeah, that makes sense, but definitely a spectrum." But what is a spectrum? Because essentially, if you're looking at autism from like this one, like a scale of 0 to 10, 0 being non-functional and 10 being fully functional, then you're gonna end up with people just they're falling through the cracks. But if you look at it as like a whole broad picture, what you will find, like in my case, my special talent or passion was articulation and reading. My mother used to get very frustrated with me, and she used to drop me off at the public library for long periods of time. And I would just walk into the kids section and just read every book. I would be sitting there, like, she would drop me off and she would come back a few hours later, and I would still be in the same spot with just piles of books all around me. And that was my ability.
It made you quite predictable as a child, because the thing about you and also our son is if you look away for a second, that they're gone. So as a child, when we would go to big shopping malls, for example, I would know he'd be in one of three stores and I could always find him there. And our son, very much the same, you know, he's going to be in one of a few parks or a couple of friends' houses and we can find him there. So predictability is actually something that goes so well with the, what's the word that you know, like stubborn, what's the other word I use?
Rigid.
Rigidness. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The rigidity, because you can predict what your person is going to do.
But it comes with understanding them and knowing them. And that was what happened with me, was everyone couldn't handle me. I can't handle it. Everyone always used to say, "I can't handle it. I don't know what's going on. Something's going on with him. I don't know what's going on with him." And it got worse as I got older, because again, I was never diagnosed. I went to regular school. They had a school for autistics in Montreal.
They still do.
They still do. But I wasn't autistic. They would just come up with different, he's an absent-minded professor. He's very sensitive. I got every label except the ones that I needed. And this continued all the way through elementary school and high school. And of course, this is just a surface view. We'll get into the deep dives about my experiences in future and later episodes, because there's a lot to unpack. And hopefully it'll be interesting and helpful. But eventually, I just kind of went through my whole life, missing opportunities, struggling, being unable to express myself. And again, a lot of stuff happened, which we will get into in future episodes, until the point when I was in my 40s. And I actually turned to Leia one day, and I was like, "I think I might be autistic. Do you think I'm autistic?"
And I said, "Yes."
And I got diagnosed. And when you're diagnosed, again, and we can look into this in a future episode too, but I will say that as an adult diagnosed autistic, when you get that diagnosis, it's like, it's cathartic, because it's like you can go back over the course of your entire life and you just let out this big, "Oh," and everything makes sense. all the memories from my past. That time when I was in grade 6 and I would just stand there with a gold necklace and spin the charm around, and the teacher's like, "What's he doing? I don't know what he's doing." Or that time in grade 4 where I stood in the puddle in rain boots and just splashed over and over again because I liked the sound and the feeling of the water. Or when I would throw my books out the window just to see what would happen. And like these weird things that I would used to do. And that story of when I was just like a baby, like a toddler, sitting on the couch in my mom's living room and just watching the shadows go across the verticals, getting the diagnosis, "I think you're autistic." I was like, "Oh, now it all makes sense."
Actually, you came to me with that first. And you said, "Do you think I'm autistic?" I said, "Yes. And I also think you have ADHD."
Right.
We have to really just drive home very quickly. Again, it's almost time to wrap up.
Right.
But that motion monitor is life has no diagnosis, no medication, being very significantly affected by both autism and ADHD. And then people sort of looked at him and wondered why he wasn't actuating correctly.
Right.
That was a very, very difficult thing to have to go through, I'm sure. And I saw.
It was painful. It was difficult. And again, opportunity. If you are also an adult diagnosed with autism or ADHD or both, because it usually comes, the two of them kind of come packaged together, which we will discuss, then let us know in the comments or email us and let us know your experiences. Or alternatively, if you also have a child like our son who was diagnosed from the beginning.
4.5. Yeah. 4.5, but we had to fight.
Who, you know, how that helped you or hurt you, or what his experience or their experiences or her experiences are with that. And whether you feel, because I was told when I said I'd like a diagnosis of autism, people were like, "Why, you have a job, you have a family. Why do you need a diagnosis in your 40s? They said, "It's not necessary. It doesn't do anything for you." And we said, "No, it is necessary, because it actualizes every experience that I ever had." So if you were told something similar, then absolutely let us know in the comments or send us emails about your experiences. We'd love to hear about them.
Oh, yes. We'll be there for you and we will back you up.
Yeah.
It is absolutely an important thing. Before we wrap up, was there anything else you wanted to mention? I did want to mention the one thing that you and Alton do have in common in terms of your functionality, if you want to put it that way, is that you both have very significant processing delays. And that in itself is going to be a whole episode.
Processing delays. Yeah.
But just to put a picture in your head, it's very cute. So you can see, you know, this very smallish 5'6" woman going up to this largest, you know, 6-foot man and going, "Now, Moshe, we're going to process through this now. We got to go quickly. We're in a rush." And, you know, there have been people who sort of stopped us and wondering, "Is he okay? Is she doing something to you, sir?" So that's also one of those awkward things that we're going to discuss. But the processing delay is huge, yeah, because it's invisible.
Yeah. And of course, we will talk about it in a future episode. But I guess that's going to be all for now. So thank you for listening. Well, that's our show for today. Now you know one autistic just a little bit better. So something you may not know about some autistics is that we often struggle with ending social interactions. So, Leia?
All right, Moshe, I'll take care of it. Thank you for listening to Now You Know One Autistic. See you next week.